drew his moon blade. Hilo's head tilted back, and he cried out, "Now!" Andon ran. None of the Greenbones were paying him any attention. He was a teenage student, merely a designated witness to this event. None of them had seen a weapon on him, or sensed even the faintest jade aura. The fear and anxiety they'd perceived in him had seemed only natural. Now he sprinted, his heart a drum in his ears, and flung himself upon his cousin's prone and bloodied form. "Andy," Hilo whispered, and reached out his hand, and from the inside of Hilo's left sleeve, Andon tore out a long string of jade and looped it around his closed fist. 2 days ago, Hilo had had nearly every piece of jade he owned removed and strung onto a thin cord that could be taped snugly against the inside of his left forearm, the arm not drawing attention with a talon knife. He left only the studs on his collarbone, the ones everyone saw, in their usual place. There was no difference in his aura. He still carried every one of his gems against his skin. Now, Hilo's body shuddered violently as his jade was ripped away. Andon's world exploded in a rush of pure energy. It was as if he'd burst out of the confines of his own body. He was everywhere and nowhere. He was crouched over his cousin. He was looking down on himself and Gaunt from above. He was inside the people around him, the pulse of their blood and the throbbing of their organs cavernous surrounding him. His own body was a strange and limiting thing, an odd combination of systems and parts, organic matter, flesh twined around bone, skin and water and brain matter. And he was keenly aware that he was merely that, and much more than that. He was sensation itself. He was conscious energy, energy that knows and manipulates itself at will. Never had he imagined such awareness, such ecstasy of power and feeling. Last night, when they'd rehearsed how it would happen, Andon had tugged at the hidden jade without pulling it entirely off Hilo's arm. They hadn't wanted to risk dangerously weakening themselves with jade rush and withdrawal. Even still, Andon had felt the tingly high of so much jade, more than he'd ever been in contact with before. That had been nothing compared to this. "Don't make a move before I signal you," Hilo had said. "If I die before I can call you, you might still have a chance, but only if Gaunt is close. He has to be close." Gaunt was close now. Andon felt the hitch in the man's motion, instant of complete surprise. Hilo had done a good job keeping all of the horn's attention focused on him and him alone, rousing his temper to obscure anything that might have made him glance back at Andon. Even the split second of intent between Hilo's cry and Andon's response. The moon blade in Gaunt's hand swung down, but there was indecision in it. The white length of metal fell so slowly, as if the air it parted were thick as honey, and Andon felt the bizarre urge to laugh when he realized Gaunt hadn't slowed down. It was Andon's perception of time that had elongated a thousandfold. Andon could feel the man's jade aura like a tangible thing that could be grasped with both hands. Almost experimentally, he brought a palm up and felt his greater than self clutch the flow of energy, envelop it, burrow into the heart of it. Gaunt froze, and then, understanding an alarm, washed into his eyes. His legendary steel poured up and around him. Andon felt his questing force being pushed back, sensed Gaunt's powerful aura battening itself in defense. Andon rose to his feet, the string of jade stones clutched in his fist, one hand still reaching out to his enemy, and pushed. His channeling was like an iron spear. It tore through the outer layers of the man's steel and stopped just short, met by impenetrable resistance, unable to go further. Gaunt's eyes bulged. The Moonblade quavered as if his entire body was locked in a paralysis of action and reaction. Andon felt his skin tingle with sudden climbing heat. Blood trickled from Gaunt's mouth and nose. Shock and panic strengthened his steel, and Andon felt it expanding inexorably back against him. He could no longer breathe. The force building inside him was such that he felt his eyes and lungs would soon burst. In that instant of desperate stalemate, Hilo pushed himself up in a surge of tenuous strength, driven by supreme force of will alone. He grabbed Gaunt's talon knife from its hip sheath and sank it into the man's side. Gaunt let out a roar of pain. "Don't you remember?" Hilo rasped. "Baijen came back from the dead to kill his enemy." Hilo collapsed to the ground. The remaining mountain fighters sprang forward to help their horn, to cut Andon and Hilo to pieces, but they were too late. The talon knife buried in Gaunt's side had created the needed opening. Gaunt's attention and steel wavered, and Andon channeled with all his force, felt the unbearable pressure inside him release in a violent surge, lancing into the other man's body. Gaunt's heart stopped, his lungs seized, the veins in his brain burst. Andon, unable to block out the cruel clarity of his perception, shared in the sensation of death, felt every terrible spike of destruction as it tore through his enemy's body. Gaunt was dying. He was dying too. As the horn fell, Andon sank with him, mouth open, but unable to make a single sound. Then the storm of death crashed out, and another wave hit. The blowback of jade energy rushing into Andon, like a wind sucked up by the angry god Yofo and shot out as an earth-scouring typhoon. The return energy rush from destroying a man as powerful as Gaunt Ash was indescribable. The light and heat of a thousand stars erupted in Andon's skull. His head rocked back, and he screamed from the very pit of his soul in a terror of agony and ecstasy. He was going to combust. He needed to expend this terrible boiling, this overabundance clawing under the surface of his skin, desperate to escape the confines of his flesh. The mountain fighters rushing at him with upraised blades were like vessels into which to channel the overflow. An outlet, a precious outlet. He didn't even need to touch them. It was as easy as snuffing the life from mice in a cage. He caught up two men in mid-step. They clutched their chests, eyes and mouths wide with shock, blades clattering to the ground. He watched with curious detachment and greedy joy as they died. The green bones that remained backed away. Andon registered their fear of him and heard himself give an odd giggle. He was a demon. A pale teenage monster drunk on jade energy and killing. What happens when you cross a goat and a tiger? Kaal Sen had wondered. Something strange and terrifying. With a shudder, Andon's spine rippled. He flung his hands out sharply, fingers splayed, unleashing a deflection that tore through the air and lifted three men off their feet, throwing them into the air before they tumbled and rolled to the ground. They scrambled up, staggering and limping, and staring back with wild alarm, they ran from him, the others following on their heels. Their footfalls thundered. The barest sense of reality floated back to Andon's conscious mind, which felt as if it were curled in terror in a dark corner of himself. Hilo's unmoving form lay on the ground, the blood and life draining from his wounds. Andon had to. He had to get help. Phone someone. He stared at the coils of jade in his right hand, and with a wrenching force of will, as strong as if he were plucking out his own eyeball, he opened his fingers and let the string of gems fall. He stood up, took one step, and suddenly, the entire world tilted and fell away into sudden blackness, and Andon sank, insensible, to the asphalt next to his cousin. Chapter 55. Not Finished. Andon awoke in the hospital, hooked up to an intravenous tube and machines that beeped quietly. His head felt heavy and swollen, his eyes crusty. His throat was raw, and his skin was tender, as if the entire surface of his body was a single bruise, and it hurt to even shift his weight on the soft mattress of the hospital bed. For a moment, he couldn't understand why he was here, and then it came back to him all at once. His heart gave a panicked lurch, and he was quickly bathed in sweat. The remembered terror and euphoria of the jade he'd harnessed, so much jade, filled his mind completely. Nothing else seemed of any importance at all. Wonder and craving gripped him as he looked down at his pale, bare arms lying on top of the white bedsheet. He'd killed Gaunt Ash. Horn of the Mountain, one of the most powerful green bones in Jonlun. He'd felt the man's death as if it had been his own, and when the agony of it had passed through him, he'd reveled in the release of the man's life energy recoiling into his own. Such exhilaration. He'd killed those other two men, too. Their deaths had been satisfying, though not quite as memorable. Perhaps only the first kill was so intense. Or was it the strength and jade ability of the man he killed that made the difference? Ah, jade. It was just as the penitent said. Jade was divine. It came from heaven, and it could make men into gods. Andon licked his parched lips, wondering where the jade was now, when he would get to put it back on and feel that way again. And suddenly, he wanted to cry. He wasn't normal. He knew that. He'd always suspected such would be the case. The powerful but unstable online, mixed with foreign blood and jade sensitivity. Yet he'd been told, and he'd believed, that the rigors of training of the academy would overcome his deficiencies. Discipline and jade acclimation created green bones who were powerful but controlled, not monsters that laughed with pure sensate joy of reaching out and stopping hearts. Hilo had killed many times, but he was still sane. Hilo! Andon's head pounded as he pushed himself up. A nurse came in, a stout, unsmiling woman who checked some readouts on Andon's monitor.
Where's Kul'jin?
Andon croaked. The woman didn't answer at first, merely released some medication into his IV tube.
Is he alive?
Andon asked.
He's alive, the nurse said.
Andon heard it as if through a gathering fog. Whatever was in the IV tube, it was powerfully sedating. In a minute, he was unconscious. When he woke again, Hilo was sitting by his bedside. Andon gasped at the sight of him. It was as if the famous youthfulness of his cousin's face had been siphoned out from under his skin, leaving a scarecrow version of himself. Hilo's eyes were bruised, his cheeks split and stitched, and one wrist was splinted. Despite this, upon seeing Andon awake, he smiled broadly at once, his sunken eyes dancing with warmth.
You did it, Andy.
In a rush of affection, he bent over Andon, seized the top of his hair, and kissed him on the brow.
You sent the mountain running. You saved the clan, cousin. And my life, I'll never forget about that.
How did we?
Andon swallowed, trying to moisten his mouth. He saw his eyeglasses on the table next to him and put them on shakily.
How were we alive?
What happened after?
It was difficult to form complete sentences. Hilo laughed. He got up and filled a paper cup with water from the sink.
They were in a private hospital room, Andon realized. Hilo moved gingerly, with little of his usual languid grace, as if he'd been taken apart and put back together, and wasn't sure if all the pieces were accounted for yet. He sat back down and placed the water in Andon's hand, closing his cousin's fingers around the cup as if guiding an uncoordinated child. Unsteadily, Andon raised it to his lips and drank, grateful and embarrassed to have the pillar of the clan sitting here and treating him so gently. Mr. Rune, the owner of the Twice Lucky, saw what happened and phoned the house. Shay called Ken and Tar. They were waiting in a building just across the freeway in Junko, less than 5 minutes away. Hilo paused to draw a breath, wincing at some unseen injury, but still smiling. It's all good news, Andy. After the mountain lost its horn and half a dozen of its other top greenbones, Ken and our fists swept in like a fire. They took back the rest of the docks in a day. Hilo's face was bright with pride. After he and Shay saw us to the hospital, Tar won us the rest of Sogan. Chuen and his men pushed into Spearpoint and killed so many of the mountain fingers there that we don't have to worry any more about losing poor man's road. We turned the war. You did. Andon tried to absorb this. Does this mean Ite's been defeated? Hilo cocked his head. Andy, a greenbone's not defeated until they're dead. Didn't the two of us just prove that? He pressed his lips together. The Mountain's an old clan, a big clan. We've hit them bad and forced Ite to pull back. She'll have to name a new horn. Probably Gaunt's first fist. I'm told he's still alive. It'll be some time before they can come back at us again. But Ite's not finished. There was grimness in Hilo's voice, but a dancing optimism in his eyes. Something Andon hadn't seen since before Lon's death. But neither are we, Andy, he said, leaning in as if to share a secret. You and me, we got Gaunt. We'll get her next. Andon was confused. Why was it so hard for him to feel happy right now? He was alive. Hilo was alive. Gaunt was dead, and no peak had prevailed. He ought to be relieved. He ought to be in good spirits, just as his cousin was. Instead, he felt hollow and lacking, hungry not for victory or vengeance, but only for the awareness and power that had been so fleeting and transformative. Brief exposure to a large quantity of jade had carved his mind with an indelible knowledge of what it was capable of. Everything else, family and clan included, paled in comparison.
How long have I been in here? He asked.
5 days, Hilo said. At Andon's look of alarm, he said, Don't worry, you'll be fine. I was dancing closer to the grave than you, and you're younger and stronger than I am. Dr. True's been in here constantly for both of us. We should make him our personal family doctor. Andon wasn't sure he could put his thoughts into words, but he had to try.
Hilo, I don't feel right. I feel strange, empty, like I don't care about important things anymore. Killing Gaunt. I felt it all. It was the worst thing I've ever had to go through, but I want to do it again.
Andon's voice cracked in distress.
There's something wrong with me, isn't there? Am I sick? Is it the itches?
Don't be silly, Hilo said. He laid a compassionate hand on Andon's shoulder and sighed. Handling that much jade for the first time, under that kind of stress, it knocked you flat. You're especially sensitive, no question of that. We've been giving you regular doses of SN1 to bring the fever down, reset your system. The doctor says your brain scans are normal now, so give it a few more days and you'll feel like yourself again. He gave Andon a pat. Don't worry, graduation is still a week away. You'll be out of here by then for sure. Neither of us is missing that. Andon looked over at the IV stand, followed the clear tube to where it was taped to the inside of his arm.
I'm being doped with shine?
The poison that had killed Lon, dripping into his veins.
Don't look so worried, Hilo said quickly.
He flicked the hanging tube with a finger.
It's entirely controlled. There's no risk.
Dr. True's been monitoring you the whole time. You'll be weaned to a low dose by the time you're out of here, and the doctor says we can talk about whether to keep you on it or try taking you off. He doesn't suggest going off it yet, since you'll be getting your graduation jade soon. Better for your body to have that safety cushion for now. It'll help you. Andon felt overcome with exhaustion. He leaned his head back and closed his eyes, his chest tight, the non-specific desire to weep still building inside him, yet unable to find release, mixing instead with the confused craving and the drug crawling through his veins. Just rest for now, Andy, Hilo said gently, and didn't say anything else after that. His hand still rested on Andon's shoulder, and through the physical contact, Andon felt the familiar thrum of his cousin's jade aura, faint and muted, either by Andon's own dulled senses or because Hilo had not recovered enough to be wearing all his jade. All that jade Andon had held, it belonged to Hilo, who had so much he didn't even feel anything when he got new pieces. Andon lay still, but resentment and envy coursed through him like an infection taking hold. Chapter 56 Graduation Day. In years to come, the city would recall the holiday week that came to pass as the New Year's bloodletting of the Jonlun clans. Many referred to it as the Vengeance of the Calls. In some parts of the city, it was nodded at approvingly. In others, it elicited the nervous tugging of earlobes. What was apparent by the time the district settled into a new stalemate was that neither clan would be enjoying a swift victory. Despite all doubts to the contrary, the youngest grandchildren of the Torch had fended off annexation, and in so doing, solidified unquestioned clan leadership. It was tradition for the graduating Year 8s of Khal Duchiron Academy, who finished their trials before the holidays, but had to wait until the auspicious start of the year for final results and graduation, to spend the first week after the break performing back-breaking service on the campus grounds, a final lesson in the divine virtue of humility, before being allowed to take their oaths and receive their jade. Andon was still recovering in the hospital and not able to join his classmates in scrubbing paving stones, repairing fences, pruning trees, and guiding clueless year ones from place to place. True to Hilo's prediction, however, he was out of Jonlun General Hospital 2 days before graduation, and well enough to attend convocation on an overcast spring day, gray with the threat of rain. Word had spread that Andon had been the only one with the pillar at the battle that had killed Gaunt Ash. When he arrived in formal academy robes to line up in the gathering hall before the ceremonies, a deep hush preceded him wherever he walked. At the check-in table, Master Sane inclined his head with more respect than Andon had ever received from an instructor.
Emery, stand at the end of the line. You'll be the last to enter.
Andon knew that to mean he'd received the highest marks in the trials, which, combined with first-of-class standing in the pre-trials, had compensated for his only slightly better-than-average academic scores to place him rank 1. Andon saluted and retreated to the end of the forming line.
Tone, he said in greeting.
Tone startled before raising his hands in a salute.
Andon-gen, he said. I'm glad to see you're well.
There was a formality in Tone's voice, the tone of a finger addressing a fist, and Andon stopped, uncertain of how to respond. He wanted to correct Tone for addressing him as a greenbone, even before the graduation ceremony, but it was clear from the other teen's manner that he'd done it deliberately. Andon swallowed his growing discomfort and turned to nod hello to Dudo and Pow. Both of them dipped into salutes. Andon's gaze drifted behind them to Lote. A fleeting emotion, a dim shadow of an ache, passed through Andon's center, but that was all. He didn't have room for anything else. That part of him felt numb. Lote, who ever since his father's violent death had a grim, hollow-eyed look about him, inclined his head toward Andon civilly.
Jen.
Andon turned and faced the front of the line, closing his hands within the long sleeves of his formal black robes. 2 weeks of convalescence, healing sessions with Dr. True, and administered SN1 had done what Hilo had promised it would. Andon felt physically recovered, and more like himself than he'd been when he'd awoken in the hospital, distraught and parched with jade craving. Even so, it had been a mental struggle to work himself up to the event today, to prepare himself to stand before the staring eyes of not just his fellow students, but the entire clan. "You're a hero, Andy," Hilo had said, but Andon didn't feel like a hero. He felt damaged and unsure of himself. He thought of the SN1 still circulating like a pollutant through his bloodstream. These people knew what he'd done, but didn't see what he'd become. A danger. A volatile substance held stable with the aid of dubious modern science. At the sounding of the drums outside, the 126 men and 32 women who'd completed the full 8 years of green bone training at Caldew Academy shuffled out of the gathering hall and into the main courtyard, filing neatly into rows in front of the low stage that had been set up facing the hundreds of folding chairs containing watching relatives and clan members. Andon knelt on the pavers with his classmates under the tent that had been erected to shield against the threat of rain. As Grandmaster Lei began speaking, Andon looked over his shoulder into the rows of spectators. He found the calls at once, sitting front and center. Hilo was in a sharp olive suit and black vest he'd bought just for the occasion. He looked much better, his face still scarred, but no longer gaunt. He was clearly in good spirits, as he'd been on the car ride over, exuding the cheerful nonchalance that had almost disappeared from him in recent months. He had one arm curled around Wen's shoulders. Andon saw him tug her affectionately to the side of his body and pull the hood of her jacket over her head to cut the slight but damp wind. On Hilo's other side was Mate Ken, and next to Wen was the weatherman. Shay sat erect, in a dark skirt and blouse, her gaze serious and slightly preoccupied. But when she noticed Andon watching, she gave him a small smile. He brought his attention back to the front as Grandmaster Lei called forward the first group of students. All Year 8s were required to declare their intended allegiances prior to final trials, and these 11 graduates had elected to take penitence oaths. A learned one from the Temple of Divine Return mounted the few steps onto the platform to administer the oath of penitence. The 11 students stood and approached the stage. They knelt at the front of the assembly and recited the lines binding them to a life of religious service, then touched their heads to the ground before rising and walking behind their classmates. The next 25 students had committed their jade abilities to the healing arts. They were called forward to take oaths before a master physician of the College of Bioenergetic Medicine, where they would continue their training. Andon shifted, his legs numb, as a third group of 18 graduates was called up before Grandmaster Lei himself to pledge themselves to the honorable profession of teaching the jade disciplines. They would return to the academy as assistant teachers the following week, with the hope of one day becoming masters. At last, the remainder of the class,
The large group who declared service and loyalty to the No Peak clan came forward en masse to take their oaths. A ripple went through the spectators and graduates alike as the pillar of the clan strode down the center aisle and mounted the stage with quick steps. Hilo turned and looked out across the crowd. Andon thought he looked pleased. Roughly 100 new green bones for the clan, nearly 2/3 of the graduating class. Some would become luckbringers, but a majority would start as fingers for Ken and his fists to command. Everyone waited for Hilo to begin speaking the Jade Warrior's oaths line by line, so the gathered graduates could repeat after him. Instead, for a long time, he said nothing, while an uncomfortable pause lengthened. People began glancing at one another in confusion. Grandmaster Lei cleared his throat impatiently, but Hilo shook his head. "Grandmaster," he said, smiling and speaking loudly enough that the crowd could hear him. "I didn't appreciate this place enough when I was standing down there in those black robes. So let me take in this beautiful sight for a minute. I'm not a student anymore, so you can't even wallop me for holding you up." The crowd chuckled at this.
"He's truly the pillar now, and everyone knows it," Andon thought. "And still himself, mostly."
"Brothers and sisters," Hilo shouted. "The pillar is the master of the clan, but pillars change. And still the Brotherhood survives and continues. You're taking this oath as much to one another as you are to me. So who knows the Greenbone Warrior's oaths by heart and can lead his classmates in taking them first?"
This was not how the ceremony was supposed to go. But even Grandmaster Lei didn't try to intercede when Lote stepped forward from the line.
"I will, Kaljen."
Hilo nodded and motioned the teen onto the stage. Andon watched, his heart beating in his throat, as Lote walked calmly up the three steps and knelt before Hilo, who leaned in to whisper something briefly into his ear before stepping back. Andon caught a glimpse of Lote's bleak and determined expression as he raised his clasped hands to his forehead.
"The clan is my blood, and the pillar is its master," he began in a strong voice that carried clearly across the courtyard.
And the voices of 100 of his classmates rose up and echoed him.
"The clan is my blood, and the pillar is its master."
As his lips moved, reciting the oath he'd already taken 2 weeks ago, Andon couldn't tear his eyes from the sight of Lote kneeling up there in front of everyone, hands raised and eyes lowered before Hilo's warm but penetrating gaze. A bewildered grief rose in Andon. He was certain this was never what Lote had wanted. He'd never wanted to follow in his father's bloody footsteps. It ought to be him, Andon, up there instead. The Calls were his family. He'd already proven himself worthy of Jade, and everyone was acknowledging him as Hilo's protege and a fearsome new force in the clan. And yet, he was stricken for Lote, and horribly, incomprehensibly grateful not to be the one on the stage, because it seemed for a long, surreal moment that Lote was him, that he'd taken Andon's place as he'd appeared when kneeling on the wooden floor of the training hall of the Call Estate after New Year's dinner. And now Andon was looking at himself through someone else's eyes, seeing blood and jade and tragedy.
"On my honor, my life, and my jade," Lote finished and touched his head to the ground.
The other new green bones of No Peak repeated his words, closing the oath. As he had with Andon, Hilo drew Lote to his feet, embracing him, and with one hand on his shoulder, said something to him in a low voice that Andon couldn't hear. Lote gave a short, tight nod, then stepped off the stage to take his place back in the line. Hilo clasped his hands in sharp salute and raised his voice, addressing the new members of the clan.
"I accept your oaths and call you my brothers in arms.
Our blood for the pillar!
Someone shouted. A few other voices rose up as Hilo descended the stage.
No peek! No peek!
Anden began to turn to the crowd to see who'd started the chant, but Grandmaster Lei, glaring disapprovingly, brought up his hands to demand silence. All the graduates and many members of the audience had grown up under the Grand Master's strict rule and instinctively fell quiet.
Now, said Grandmaster Lei, with more than a touch of reproof at both the overly dramatic oath-taking performance and the crowd's reaction, we must award these graduates the jade they've earned for their years of hard work, discipline, and training.
At the back of the stage was a table with four separate groupings of small wooden boxes. Every set of eyes swiveled eagerly to Master Sane as he took a box from the first pile and opened it.
Ah, Satinya,
he read from the inside of the lid. Immediately following final trials, all the Year 8s had turned in their training bands and the jade they contained. Now their jade would be returned permanently, possibly with fewer or more stones than they'd surrendered, depending on how they'd performed in their exams. Each pile on the table represented a level of accomplishment in the jade disciplines. Ao Sati, who'd stepped onto the stage to polite applause, had earned one jade stone, strung onto a metal chain. Grandmaster Lei lifted it from the box and placed it over Ao's head. Ao would become one of the lowest-ranked fingers, or if he was bright enough with numbers, an entry-level luckbringer.
Goru Goru Soto, said Master Sane,
calling up the next graduate as Ao saluted and stepped back off the stage. So it went, until the first group of boxes was cleared and a larger grouping of graduates began coming up one at a time to receive two stones of jade each. For some of the young men and women graduating, the jade they were awarded today would be the only green they would ever wear. For others, it was merely the first of more to come, with jade passed down through families, awarded by superiors in the clan, or most prestigious of all, won in duels and battles. When the higher-ranked students, who'd each earned three stones, began filing across the stage, Anden found himself so nervous he could barely watch. Dudo received his jade, then Pao and Tone, all of them breaking into smiles once they'd gotten past the Grand Master and joined their fellow graduates on the other side. The collection of boxes on the table grew smaller. There were only a dozen or so boxes in the final pile containing the reward for the top students, the ones who'd earned the maximum of four jade pieces. As much jade as one would expect on a senior finger or a junior fist, more than most Kekanese and any foreigners could safely tolerate. Putting on that much jade ought to be easy for Anden now, after what he'd been through. It would be a momentarily disorienting rush, like what he'd experienced during training, nothing like the powerful, crippling high he'd suffered in front of the twice lucky. Yet still, his fingers began to feel numb and chilled, and his stomach clenched in craving and visceral reluctance. The Grandmaster began calling up the final students. An especially loud round of foot-stomping applause greeted Lote as he stepped up and bent his head for the Grandmaster. Anden could hear his fellow graduates nearby, already chatting, congratulating each other, discussing how they'd have their stones reset. Whether they wanted thumb rings, or eyebrow studs, or other, more daring piercings. There was only one box left on the table.
Emery Anden, said Master Sane.
The chatter died as Anden stood up. Suddenly, he felt as if he was in a waking dream, a self-consciously fictive state in which he was doing something without believing that he was really there. His legs moved him forward. His shoes hit the steps, and when he reached the stage, he heard someone shout,
Call Jen!
Applause broke out, and other voices echoed the first.
Call Jen!
Anden paused, thinking the crowd was shouting for Hilo.
When he realized they were cheering for him, heat flowed into his face.
They're saying I'm a Kahl.
A mixed-blood orphan like him, and they were placing him alongside Lon and Hilo and Shay. It was the greatest flattery he could imagine, and he was mortified. Because it wasn't true. He wasn't like them. As Grandmaster Lei lifted out the 4 jade stones on a silver chain, Andon stumbled back as if the box contained a venomous spider.
No!
He blurted. Grandmaster Lei frowned, his motion arrested.
What do you mean, no?
I don't...
Andon choked out.
I don't want to wear jade!
In all his years at the Academy, he'd never seen the Grandmaster entirely taken aback, as he was now, his gray eyebrows like 2 bristly arches, his lined face locked into place. Master Sane and the other faculty members on stage looked at each other in bewilderment, but none seemed to know what to say. A graduate refusing his jade? Such a thing had never happened. Andon heard the stunned silence before the whispers of disbelief began to rise. He didn't dare fix his eyes anywhere but at his feet. He was disgracing himself, disgracing Hilo and Shay. Burning with shame, he clasped his shaking hands and brought them to his bowed forehead in a salute of deepest apology before turning and descending the stage without speaking. He had never seen Hilo so livid with confusion and rage. The pillar came straight for him as soon as Grandmaster Lei brought the graduation ceremony to a quick and awkward conclusion. The crowd of watching clan members parted before Hilo in fearful haste. Hilo's fingers locked around Andon's bicep like talons. He dragged his unresisting cousin away from his fellow graduates, around the back of the stage, putting several feet of distance between them and the silent stares of so many others. Hilo spun Andon to face him.
What do you think you're doing?
Andon tried to speak, but when he opened his mouth, he didn't know what to say. There seemed to be no way to explain what he'd done. Hilo's hand was still clamped around his arm, and through it, Andon could feel his cousin's jade aura shrilling like a swarm of infuriated hornets.
I'm sorry,
he managed at last.
You're sorry?
Hilo seemed unable to find words of his own for a moment.
What's this about, Andy? What's come over you? You made a fool of yourself in front of the clan, in front of all your green-bone brothers. You made a fool of me. I'm not like you, Hilo.
Andon burst out, anguished. Everything he'd feared about himself, every doubt he'd tamed with strict training and faith in the clan, every nightmare involving bloody bathtub water and his mother's screams, seemed in one instant to rise out of that small box on the stage, overwhelming even the horrible knowledge that he was ruining all that he'd ever wanted.
I'm not someone who should have jade. Who was ever meant to have jade? I start wearing it today. I'll only want more and more, as much as I had when I killed Gaunt. I'll become worse than my ma, the crazy mad witch. I know I will. I can feel it in my blood now, no matter what you say.
He could barely breathe enough to speak.
You could dope me up on shine, on that poisonous Aspenian stuff that killed Lon. But that's not how I want to live. I don't want to be what you're making me.
What? Hilo demanded angrily. A greenbone? A part of this family?
A weapon.
Andon finished in a whisper. Hilo released him with a jerk and stepped back. His face contorted in a baffling mix of emotions, foremost among them hurt. His eyes widening in deeply wounded surprise, as if Andon had pulled out a knife and cut him across the cheek. Behind Hilo's shoulder, Andon glimpsed Shay approaching, Ken and Wen following her but stopping some distance away, holding back from intruding. The pillar took a step forward, and raised his hands to seize his cousin by the shoulders. Andon flinched, certain for a second Hilo would really hurt him now. But Hilo merely said, in a calm, forced voice,
"This is my fault, Andy."
He gave Andon a firm shake to force him to look up.
"That fight, it was too much, too quickly.
And landing in the hospital afterward, that was a scary thing. You scared yourself. I'm the one to blame. But I had to do it, because we needed you. I couldn't have done it myself, couldn't have saved the clan without you. We still need you." Andon felt terrible guilt searing his face as Hilo said, in a quiet voice that was both entreating and reproving,
"You humiliated both of us just now, but I know you didn't mean to. I'm not going to hold it against you. Let's go back out there together to find Grandmaster Lei and get your graduation jade. It's what you worked for all these years. We'll forget this happened, and we'll do it right this time. Build you up slowly. You're a member of this family, Andy. You were raised to be a greenbone."
Andon felt his resolve quaver, but then he shook his head vehemently.
"I'm too sensitive to jade. It makes me too powerful. It makes me enjoy killing too much."
He swallowed thickly.
"The mountain knows how much of a threat I am now. If I wear any green at all, Ait will do whatever she can to have me killed, and I'll have to kill so many others just to stay alive."
His words were rushing out in a torrent of desperation.
"And every time I kill, I'll enjoy it more and more and earn more jade, and all the shine in the world won't help me in the end. I know it."
Hilo threw up his hands.
"The mountains wanted me dead for years. We live with death and madness angling for us, but we do what we have to do. We deal with it. You think I had it any easier than you last week? I had to go through fucking jade withdrawal when I was most of the way to being a corpse, and still wake up to being the goddamned pillar."
His voice rose. He forced it back down with visible effort.
"Being powerful makes you a target. Being a call makes you a target. But a greenbone never turns his back on family or his clan."
The light in Hilo's dilated pupils was dangerous.
"Think about what you're doing, Andy."
Shay appeared next to them suddenly. She spoke in a voice that was low and resolute, and carried a current of cold reproach that she turned on her brother.
"This is Andon's decision, Hilo. He's graduated and taken oaths. He's a man now." "Who do you think those oaths are to?"
Hilo demanded.
"Those are clan oaths, made to the pillar. They're what we live and die by. If you do this, Andy, you're betraying me."
The grimace on Hilo's face was terrible.
"How could you say I made you into a weapon? Like I didn't love you and treat you like my little brother, like you were nothing to me but a tool. How could you say that?"
He took a step backward, shoulders trembling as if it were physically painful to hold himself back from murdering his miserable cousin where he stood. His face and voice turned suddenly cold and remote with scorn.
"You do this, and you're out of the family." "Hilo!"
Shay hissed, looking as if she would strike him.
"Stop this! Hilo-chan!"
Andon pleaded, his body turning cold.
"Get out of my sight," Hilo said.
When Andon didn't move, he roared,
"Get out of my sight, you ungrateful, traitorous mongrel! I never want to see you again!"
Andon stumbled backward, stricken, the force of Hilo's flushed fury strangling whatever words might have tried to escape his throat. He turned and ran. He ran until he left the grounds of the academy. He tore off his graduation robes and threw them into the dirt, and kept running in his dress pants and thin shirt, muddying them as he scrambled through the forest of Widow's Park without regard for direction. He ran until tears blurred his vision and exertion scalded his lungs and legs. When he stopped running, He kept stumbling and pushing through the trees, as if he could escape what had happened, as if he could lose his shame in the woods. When he emerged onto a main road, he saw where he was, and he began running again. The cemetery gates were open for visiting hours, and he panted his way up the gravesite-cluttered hillside, half-sobbing, until he collapsed in a heap in front of Lon's headstone at the foot of the Call family memorial.
"I'm sorry,"
he gasped, trembling, the wind chilling the sweat-soaked shirt to his skin. Fat raindrops had begun to fall, streaking the lenses of his glasses and plastering the hair to his head. Rain splattered the marble slab, darkening it from a whitish green to a color almost like dirty jade.
"I'm sorry, Lon."
Andon sat and wept. When Shay showed up minutes or hours later, she was carrying a black umbrella, which she held over him, letting the rain fall on her uncovered head as she stood next to him, gazing at the family's final resting place.
"He would have been proud of you, Andon," she said matter-of-factly. "He was always proud of you."
Chapter 57. Forgiveness. The letter that was delivered to the weatherman's office on Ship Street 2 weeks later held no return address, but Shay knew who it was from as soon as she picked it up and saw the tight, upright handwriting scratched across the outside in blue fountain pen ink. She sat down at her desk, fingering the corners of the stiff envelope, then tore it open and read.
"Dearest Shaysa, I can't tell you how much I regret having to betray your trust. I've always done as Kaljen commanded in all things, and I can still say that is true. I assume that you and Hilo are searching for me, and I expect no sympathy or mercy should we meet again. Take care what you do now. Hilo may believe he has won, but a mountain is not easily pushed into the sea. There's nothing I can do to change the fate of your brother, poor Andon, but my heart aches to think of anything bad happening to you. So consider this a sincere warning from your caring uncle. Have a plan to escape Kaycon quickly and on your own. Store away some money and use your Aspenian connections so no one in the clan knows. A good weatherman is always reading the clouds. With fond regrets, Yun Dorupon."
Shay swiveled her chair around slowly to look out upon the city below. Springtime warmth hung in the thin smog over the steady hum of the freeway and the bustle of the harbor. The air conditioning in Shay's office came on with a noisy, chugging sound. She felt, suddenly, very aware of herself, of the flesh and blood, breath and aura that comprised her physical being. Sitting here in this office that had for so long belonged to the man who had written the letter in her hands. She and her family were alive on a day she had thought, a few weeks ago, they would not be. No Peak had suffered, and was suffering still, but it hung on, tenacious, as green bones in their ways had for hundreds of years. She read the letter through once again, then held the corner of it to a cigarette lighter and watched it burn down in the ashtray.
"I won't run, Doru. Not this time. And I'm coming for you."
Seventh day brunch service at the Twice Lucky was not as brisk as it had been in the past, but with the docks back in No Peak control and violence on the streets having settled down, business was returning to the popular old waterfront establishment. Shay and Hilo sat across from each other in a booth situated away from the rest of the diners. Kal Sen's wheelchair was pulled up to the end of the table. Kianla, sitting next to him, adjusted the napkin in the old man's lap. Wen was not able to join them this morning. She was taking Aspenian language classes several times a week at John Loon City College when she wasn't traveling as part of her new job. Shay placed some sausage and pickled vegetables on her grandfather's plate next to hers. He mumbled something that sounded like appreciation and patted her hand. These were the moments she looked for now. Small things. Reminders of the family patriarch she'd admired and loved. The man who'd insisted she'd be no less a greenbone than her brothers. Kal Sen's remaining fragments of lucidity might be illusory and brief as the appearance of peace in the city of John Loon, but she appreciated both all the more for their fragility. The mountain had retrenched, shoring up defenses in Summer Park, Spear Point, and the other southern districts that comprised its core territories. Rumor had it that Ait Mada had appointed a new horn. Not Juan Balu, Gaunt's first fist, as Hilo and almost everyone else had expected. Instead, Ait had traveled to Wylon Temple School outside of John Loon and recruited one of her father's former warriors, Na Suen. Na had spent the last 2 years living an undemanding life as a senior instructor at Wylon. A clan reward, it was generally suspected, for giving Ait Mada's ascension as pillar his full and vigorous support, including slitting the throat of Ait Iodo with commendable alacrity. He was said to be a master of perception. Shay tried again to enjoy the meal and put the war out of her mind for a brief spell. Across the table from her, Hilo plucked at the plate of crispy squid balls.
"These make it all worth it," he said,
a smile curving his lips but not reaching his eyes. He was trying to be cheerful, but Shay was not fooled. He had been beaten to within spitting distance of death by Gaunt and his men, and many weeks later, he still saw Dr. True regularly and tired easily from the injuries he'd sustained. But that was not what ailed him. Her brother carried a cloak of hurt over him, a sullen resentment that often flared into anger or self-doubt. He'd saved the clan, but lost another brother.
"You should forgive him," Shay said. "Even if he can't forgive you yet."
She considered the irony of these words coming from her mouth. There had once been a time when she'd been certain she never wanted to see or speak to Hilo again. And here they were, pillar and weatherman of the clan. She hadn't been able to get Hilo to acknowledge any mention she made of Andon. And sure enough, her brother did not look at her or reply to this latest attempt. Shay kept trying. It was early yet. Lon had told her that after she left for Aspenia, Hilo hadn't spoken about her for 6 months.
"Don't you want to know where he is? Whether he's somewhere safe?"
She'd at least made arrangements for that.
"No," said Hilo.
Any answer was progress. Shay didn't press further. After leaving her cousin broken-spirited but calm on the beach behind her mother's cottage, she'd spoken to Wen, who had spoken to Ken, who had quietly sent two reliable guards to Morenia. Mr. Une came up to their table, half-bowed in a mincing shuffle. The left side of his head was bandaged with a thick wad of gauze. He carried a small black wooden box, and his face was tight with a forced smile that did little to mask his extreme nervousness.
"Call, Jens," he asked. "Is everything to your satisfaction?"
Hilo set aside his downcast manner and offered the restaurateur an expectant smile.
"Mr. Une, you know how happy I am to be back in one of my favorite spots."
The owner of the Twice Lucky flushed and bent at the waist as he set the small black box on the table in front of Hilo, as if humbly presenting him with a special dish from the kitchen, except that the unopened box contained Mr. Une's left ear. A plea for the pillar's mercy for having turned to the mountain.
"I hope to continue serving you, Kal Chen," he said, his voice trembling a little.
He dabbed his brow as he bent to Shay and Kal Sen as well, including them in his appeal. Hilo put his hand on the box and gently set it aside. Mr. Une sagged visibly in relief. Touching the box was a sign of the pillar's acceptance. Hilo said, soberly, "All's forgiven, my friend. Sometimes even the most loyal and devoted men make mistakes when they're forced